is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. And coming up on Africa News Tonight, the UN Refugee Agency says an airstrike in Ethiopia's Tigray region kills 3 civilians. And also 13 civilians have been killed in separate attacks in Burkina Faso. And the top soccer tournament, Africa Cup of Nations, starts this weekend in Cameroon. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Representatives of Libya's National Forces for Change have proposed holding the postponed elections in a sequence rather than at once, starting with the parliamentary polls to avoid the legal issues that surrounded some presidential candidates. The proposal was made during a meeting between Stephanie Williams and representatives of the National Forces for Change. Wolfgang Borchtey, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, discussed election scenarios with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shadawi, and the chances for controversial candidates like Saif al-Islam Gaddafi and General Khalifa Haftar.
If they are really going to take the electoral law serious as they are right now, they would need to exclude Saif al-Islam as he has a criminal record. There is not only a warrant for him from the International Criminal Court, but there is also an ongoing case in Libya against him. With regard to Haftar, I'm not aware that currently in Libya there is an ongoing criminal case against him. So we may like it or not, for the time being, he would be eligible to run.
Waiting for a new date to hold the Libyan elections, what are the possible scenarios?
Elections would have been really an opportunity for Libya to get rid of the whole corrupt political class. But unfortunately, it is not realistic that presidential or parliamentary elections will happen anytime soon. Some groups urge to have at least parliamentary elections, but this is also unlikely. I would say it is likely that Dabeiba serves on as a GNU prime minister. He is currently acting as if nothing had happened, and he could very well succeed with this under the protection of the Tripoli and Misrata militias, who have both no interest in elections. Another scenario would be that the HOR could attempt to designate a new prime minister, as they have announced already several times and as it is demanded by many of the LPDF delegates. But if this person is not someone who could get the militias from Misrata and at least some of those in Tripoli on his side, he will not be able to assume his office. So we need to forget about anyone from outside of the greater Tripoli-Misrata area. There are currently legal challenges against Dabeiba about his candidacy, about re-entering the GNU while still being a candidate for a presidency, and about his probably fake university degrees. The Attorney General, who is, from my point of view, an honest man, will play an important role in this, and we will see the outcome. In the case, in the likely case, that Dabeiba will serve on, we will see a continuation of some kind of predator system or kleptocracy, as some people call it, including LPDF members, a neglect of the east and of the south, and an increasingly worsening of the social situation of the ordinary people. The question is, how long will be this accepted by those not benefiting from the current chaos? This will probably lead over months, not tomorrow, not next week, not next month, but in the midterm, to an increasing rift between Tripolitania and the others. We will see some more oil blockades. We have already one ongoing in Fezzan. We could easily see the establishment of regional governments, maybe under the umbrella of the GNU. And we will certainly see increasing tensions and could see a renewed outbreak of violence. I am not sure giving a blank check to the Dabeiba government through the recent joint declaration of the United States, UK, France, Italy and Germany was a very good idea, as this will certainly not facilitate their readiness to find a compromise.
That was Wolfgang Borchtey, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, speaking with my colleague Mohamed El-Shenawi. The UN Refugee Agency says an airstrike in Ethiopia's Tigray region has killed 3 people, 2 of them children. The statement did not say who specifically carried out the airstrike in the Mai Aini Eritrean refugee camp on Wednesday. According to reports by the Associated Press, Ethiopia's military has conducted deadly airstrikes in Tigray in recent months, while Tigrayan ground forces earlier in the conflict attacked Eritrean's refugee camps. Also earlier in the war, thousands of refugees were forced to flee from the Mai Aini camp amid attacks by both Tigray forces and soldiers from nearby Eritrea. UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi has called on all sides to respect the rights of all civilians. An estimated tens of thousands of people have been killed since the war in Ethiopia's Tigray region erupted in November 2020. Nigerian police say gunmen have killed two local workers at a hydroelectric dam project in Niger State and abducted three Chinese workers. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Police said in a statement Thursday that the incident occurred on Tuesday afternoon. They say heavily armed gunmen opened fire in broad daylight on Chinese expatriates and local staff working on a hydroelectric transmission project near Gusase village in central Niger State. Niger State Police spokesperson Wasu Abiodun said the police tactical team immediately responded to the attack, exchanged fire with gangs, and rescued four other Chinese nationals and two local workers in the process. The local workers later died in the hospital of gunshot wounds, authorities said. Commissioner of Police in Niger State Monday Bala says authorities are working to rescue the three Chinese abductees.
We have since mobilized our officers and men, our intelligence team, they will all be deployed to see how we can rescue the victims. And we are collaborating with all the stakeholders, all the community to give us vital information, that is intelligence as to their movements, so that we can nip in the bud earlier on.
The Chinese embassy in Nigeria has not commented on the incident, but expatriates are often victims of armed attacks like this in a bid to squeeze huge ransoms from their companies. Last year, Niger State witnessed increased attacks by criminal gangs or bandits, including an attack on an Islamic seminary where many young students were kidnapped. In response to mounting pressure, Nigerian authorities recently designated criminal gangs as terrorist organizations. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
13 civilians have been killed in separate attacks in Burkina Faso. According to the French news agency AFP, 11 were killed on Wednesday at the village of Anakuna and two were killed in the town of Nowaka. The attack has caused villagers to flee the area. Burkina Faso has been struggling with jihadist attacks since 2015 when militants linked to Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State group began mounting cross-border raids from neighboring Mali. More than 2,000 people have died according to statistics compiled by AFP. Furthermore, the National Emergency Aid Agency says 1.5 million people, nearly two-thirds children, were internally displaced as of November 30th. Burkina Faso security forces are poorly equipped to face a ruthless and highly mobile enemy, adept at carrying out hit-and-run raids on civilians using motorcycles and fast-moving pickup trucks. Zimbabwe's government wants to enlist the United Nations in its effort to recover what it says is the cost of training Zimbabwean health workers who now work throughout the world. Arigando gives us more on the story.
Health and Child Care Minister Constantine Chiwenga recently revealed the government is asking the United Nations and other multilateral agencies to help pay back training costs for its health workers overseas. The health minister estimated that Zimbabwe spends as much as $350,000 to train doctors and other health workers and says the country loses out each time a health professional leaves. Some critics say if Zimbabwe's government wants nurses and doctors to stay at home, it should pay them enough so that they have dignified and sustainable livelihoods. Butonyati of the Migrant Workers Association in South Africa says the government's energies are misdirected.
They left because the government failed to provide them with the conducive work environment and also the support that they needed in order for them to render proper care. I've worked with the Zimbabweans migrated to Swaziland. From Swaziland, some of them migrated to Australia, some went overseas to Canada and other countries. I mean, these people were forced out of the country not because they wanted to leave. they were forced by the terrible work environment where they couldn't, you know, sustain themselves and their families.
Nyatin critics say one factor pushing health workers to leave is the manner in which government has dealt with their labor actions.
You have seen how government usually reacts to the strikes of doctors, to the strike of nurses, you know, descend on them with a hairy hand. So professionals cannot stand such kind of rubbish from their own government.
Over the past few years, medical workers have held several labor actions to protest low pay and a lack of medical supplies to care for patients. Nyati also says the government should not make demands on Zimbabweans overseas since it denies them the right to vote while abroad.
It is totally unfair for them to demand anything from people that they've forced out of the country and people that they are refusing the right to vote. We feel actually offended by them following us around to tell us about how we should help them, our hard-earned, you know, income, when they are denying us the basic right to choose the kind of government that we want.
Political analyst Effie Ngwe says the government initiative has little chance of success.
So approaching the United Nations for such a thing is not only unprecedented, but it won't deliver what they expect. Zimbabweans leave fleeing the economic collapse of the country and political persecution, and they go to other countries where they then work. That is why Zimbabwe is not having any benefit from that, except through the billions of dollars of remittances from those workers.
According to Zimbabwe news media, the government estimates as many as 40% of the health workers trained in the country since independence work overseas. Their departure compounds problems such as shortages of drugs and medical supplies. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
Uganda's military has denied allegations that it is holding prominent Ugandan author Kakwenza Rukirabasha Haija, who was detained on December 30. The author's lawyer says he has been tortured and that the military is refusing to release him in order to hide the evidence. Halima Tumani reports from Kampala.
On Thursday, Eva Basima, wife of award-winning Ugandan author Kakwenza Rukirabashaija, saw an affidavit against three top security officials and Uganda's attorney general. In her affidavit, Basima contends that since her husband was detained a week ago, she has not been able to speak with him. Armed men arrested the award-winning author at his Kampala home on December 30th after he published comments critical of President Yoweri Museveni's son. The author's lawyer, Aaron Kiza, says Kakwenza's wife was only able to see him on Monday when security personnel took him to his home in Iganga in Eastern Region for a search. On Tuesday, a magistrate ordered Kakwenza to be released without conditions, but police have so far ignored the order. The lawyer says Kakwenza has been tortured while in custody of the Army's Special Forces Command, or SFC, and that's why police are refusing to release him or produce him in court.
On Monday also, the torture is revealed during the search. The man was urinating, blood was vomiting, he was limping, and he was complaining that his buttocks is rotting. That was his complaint. And also revealed is that he has been detained at the SFC Entebbe.
Lieutenant Colonel Ronald Kakurungu, the Army deputy spokesperson, denied the allegations to VOA.
Okay, if the lawyers think that they can take you there. Yeah, we also have said that we tortured him. Whoever is saying that he was tortured should go and prove those allegations.
On Twitter, Kakwenza called Museveni's son, Lieutenant General Muhoozi Kainerugaba, obese, drunk, bad-tempered, and a rotting corpse of a future president. Kainerugaba is seen as a possible successor to his long-ruling father in Uganda's 2026 election. There has been growing international concern over Kakwenza's alleged torture and continued detention by security officials. Eamon Gilmore, the EU's special representative for human rights, said in a tweet Wednesday that he was alarmed by reports of the author's alleged torture and incommunicado detention. Gilmore noted that Kakwenza remained held without trial despite a court order for his unconditional release, urging Ugandan authorities to uphold the rule of law and due process. Lawyer Kiza voiced hope that Kakwenza would appear in court on Monday. Halima Othmani for VA News, Kampala, Uganda.
Three Nigerian pirates picked up by the Danish Navy in the Gulf of Guinea have been released. According to Reuters, since no country in the surrounding area wanted the pirates, they were taken off the Danish frigate and put in a small dinghy with enough food and fuel to last them until they reach shore. Danish forces and frigates were deployed to the Gulf of Guinea in October in an operation to protect shipping amid heightened security risks from pirates. Four pirates were killed in November in waters south of Nigeria. The Gulf of Guinea has been a piracy hotspot for years, but incidents have decreased since national authorities stepped up security efforts. A community health service in Africa's largest urban slum is helping poor people get affordable emergency services during the COVID pandemic. The Kibera Community Emergency Response Team in Nairobi is offering a $1 monthly fee for access to emergency services, including an ambulance. Victoria Munga has more from Nairobi.
Poor people like those living in Nairobi's Kibera slum find it difficult to access emergency health care, even where public services such as clinics and hospitals are provided within the slums. The high cost effectively bars most Kibera residents from calling an ambulance. It's a challenge Moses Omondi, who was himself born and brought up in Kibera slum, has undertaken. He formed a community emergency response team that provides services to slum residents for a fee of $1 a month, including ambulance transport to the hospitals.
If you have an ambulance, you can easily access an hospital, because no hospital should deny you services when you've been taken there by an ambulance. It means it's an emergency case that need an emergency attention.
Annette Okumu is one of about 300 subscribers to the ambulance service. She says she received potentially life-saving care inside an ambulance after an accident last year.
The condition I was in wasn't that good. I was really having a very bad headache. I was bleeding. So maybe I could have overbled if I couldn't have gotten the first aid services.
Non-profit groups and other benefactors support the service. So far, there is one ambulance for an estimated 250,000 residents in the slum. Officials hope to increase the number to 5. Ambulance services in Kenya ordinarily cost up to $400 depending on the needs of a patient, such as a ventilator and the distance involved. Officials say arrangements that provide public access to affordable emergency services are especially important during the COVID-19 era. Judith Okech is the head of the Ambulex Kenya service.
It's a service that people are acknowledging that they very much need. And you'll realize that people living within such settings, some of them have never called for an ambulance because they know that if they do call for an ambulance, it's never going to get there, or they'll be asked for, you know, a lot of money that they're not able to afford.
Residents say the community service emergency response team offers hope they will have better access to healthcare they need. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Nairobi.
Cameroonian officials have joined hundreds of Muslims and Christians in the capital Yaoundé to pray for peace during the Africa Football Cup of Nations games. Cameroon is hosting Africa's top football championship starting Sunday, including in western regions where Anglophone separatists have vowed to disrupt the games. Police say the rebels set off a bomb yesterday in one of the towns where matches will be held, but nobody was injured. Moki Edwin Kindeka reports from Yaoundé.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Ar-Rahmanir Rahim.
Imam Suleiman Buba of Yaoundé's Tsinga Mosque prays in Arabic for peace in Cameroon. During the prayers Thursday, Buba asked God to protect football players, fans and match officials coming to Cameroon for the African Football Cup of Nations, which begins Sunday, January 9. Among the more than 60 Muslim and Christian clerics present was Jean Mbarga, Archbishop of Yaoundé. Mbarga says the prayer at the Mary Queen of the Apostles Basilica in Yaoundé asked God to intercede for a peaceful AFCON in Cameroon.
L'avènement de la CAN est aussi l'avènement des nouveaux Cameroun qui croient en la paix.
He knows Cameroonians love football very much and will be coming out to cheer their team, the Indomitable Lions, and other African teams they cherish. He says the African Football Cup of Nations should therefore mark a new beginning for a peaceful, strong, and united Cameroon. He says Muslims and Christians have jointly prayed for the safety of players, match officials, and football fans who will be in Cameroon for AFCON. Mbarga said he and the cleric who attended the prayer strongly believe that because Cameroonians love football, AFCON will remove the country from the agony it has been going through in several troubled spots. Mbarga said the Cameroon Association for Interreligious Dialogue organized the prayer. Cameroon Prime Minister Joseph John Goute represented President Paul Biya at the prayer. The Cameroon Association for Interreligious Dialogue said at least 400 civilians, 20 ministers and senior state functionaries attended the prayer. Cameroon is hosting the continent's top football tournament from Sunday to February 6. Separatists fighting to create an independent English-speaking state in the French-speaking majority country have vowed to disrupt the games. On social media platforms like Facebook and WhatsApp, the separatists say they are in ongoing battles with Cameroon government troops. They add that Limbe and Boya are not safe zones. Limbe and Boya are English-speaking western towns that will host group matches for teams from Gambia, Mali, Mauritania, and Tunisia. Separatist fighters said Thursday they set off a roadside bomb in Half Mile, a neighborhood in the town of Limbe. Capo Daniel is deputy defense chief of the Ambazonia Defense Forces, a rebel group in Cameroon's English-speaking northwest and southwest regions. Capo says fighters have vowed to disrupt the games in Limbe despite the heavy presence of Cameroon troops.
The Cameroon government have drawn our forces into those venues because they have stationed their military in those areas, so we shall combat them. On the 30th of December, we planted an IED at Half Mile. Today again, we planted another IED to send a message to all the visitors that are coming to watch football to understand that they are putting themselves in harm's way.
Cameroon military confirmed Thursday's explosion in Limbe, but called it an isolated attempt to scare football fans, players, and officials. The government said no one was injured, but called on civilians to collaborate with the military by reporting suspected fighters in their communities. Biya last week called on civilians to use AFCON as an opportunity to turn a new page in a country that has suffered so many crises. The Central African state started a military campaign against Boko Haram terrorism on its northern border with Nigeria in 2013. In 2013, Cameroon said the political turmoil in neighboring Central African Republic was having a spillover on its eastern border with rebel incursions. The Cameroon military has been deployed to the eastern border with CAR since 2013. The military is also deployed to stop rebels fighting to create an independent state in the Central African state's English-speaking western regions. The United Nations reports that more than 3,300 people have died in the conflict since 2017. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Barrow, thank you again for tuning in.